This is a season of self-examination. This psalm captures the particulars on our rap sheets.
This is Chapter, Verse, and Season, a lectionary podcast from Yale Bible Study. Join us each week as two Yale Divinity School professors look at an upcoming text from the Revised Common Lectionary. This episode, we have Gregory Mobley, visiting professor of interpretation of the Hebrew Bible in congregational settings, and Frederick Jerry Streets, adjunct associate professor of divinity and social work. They're discussing Psalm 51, verses 1 through 12, which is appointed for the fifth Sunday in Lent in Year B. The text is read for you by student Antonio Vargas Jr.
Psalm 51, verses 1 through 12. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your steadfast love. According to your abundant mercy, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions, and my sin is ever before me. Against you, you alone have I sinned, and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are justified in your sentence and blameless when you passed judgment. Indeed, I was born guilty, a sinner when my mother conceived me. You desire truth in the inward being. Therefore, teach me wisdom in my secret heart. Purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow. Let me hear joy and gladness. Let the bones that you have crushed rejoice. Hide your face from my sins, and blot out all my iniquities. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and put a new and right spirit within me. Do not cast me away from your presence, and do not take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, and sustain in me a willing spirit.
It's impossible to read this psalm without being influenced by the superscription that begins it, where it says that this is a psalm David composed after Nathan had come to him, after David had gone to Bathsheba. And I even think there's a little double entendre there about going and coming that works even in Hebrew as well as English. So perhaps this is about David and Bathsheba, but even if it isn't David speaking after the prophet Nathan confronted him about his spiraling cycle of crimes that started with adultery and ended in murder. But this is a psalm from the depths, and I don't know if everyone who's listening has been there. What do you think, Jerry? I mean, I feel like I've been there. Have you been there?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I misplaced my car keys, and that was really frustrating because luckily I didn't have to leave right away. So we started looking all over the house for the car keys, and one of the things we did was looked in the garbage, and so we took the garbage can out, spread a big plastic mat on our back porch and poured all the garbage out in case I just inadvertently dropped them in the garbage because I had other things in my hand. And I don't know about people listening to us, but it's quite an experience to look at your own garbage because it's not only your garbage, your garbage is contributed to other people's garbage as in a communal garbage can in a family. And so the consequences of David's behavior was not just had an impact on him, but it also had an impact on the community. One could think of Nathan as an individual, but also Nathan as a representative of the community of which David was a part. And we don't know how Bathsheba felt about the experience. Her reaction to being involved is not available to us. But we do know from the 51st Psalm that there is this deep, this penitence kind of tone. I think one of the reasons why the Psalms, many portions of the Psalms grab us and is so endearing is because of their humility and desired, the aspirational aspects of David to be at a certain point in his life, but yet hoping that he can not rise above it, but to rise through it. And to rise through it means to look at it, to look at the garbage, mm-hmm. and to make the adjustments accordingly.
You know, this reading is for the Sunday before Palm Sunday in the fifth week of Lent. And this is a season of self-examination. And, you know, this psalm captures us, whatever the particulars on our rap sheets, when we dwell on our darkest moments, the times we betrayed those we loved, the times we betrayed our highest ideals. And when the psalmist begins, he says, "Have mercy on me, O God," essentially, not according to what I've done, but according to your chesed, your steadfast love. Treat me because you're just good, don't treat me because I'm so bad. And then the other noun there, it says, treat me according to your chesed, your steadfast love, but also treat me according to your rachamim, which in Hebrew means womb love. Treat me the way a parent feels about a child, even before it's born, even before a child has behaved. Treat me simply on the basis of that deep physical connection that binds us together.
Mm-hmm. It's almost as if David is saying, I hope you will treat me according to the way I understand you to be to me, like a parent is to a child. And one could look at that as kind of a little manipulative, too. You know, it's kind of slick, you know. he's got this deep need, and he said, surely you're going to treat me according to your love. You're not going to treat me any differently. Let's assume that is the case. The question becomes, does treating David out of his expectation of the love of God lead David to being different? It's not about, is God going to be different? God is constant, but is David going to be different? The theologian and mystic Howard Thurman used to talk about yielding the nerve center of your being, that once there is a commitment, a conversion to a set of values, beliefs, that actually controls your nervous system, your behavior. And it's another way of talking about how the word becomes flesh for someone, how it gets so ingrained in them that they are aware that they can still do the opposite, but it's ingrained in them at a certain way, at a certain point where the penchant is to go in that direction and not back to the place of darkness.
Well, you know, this is a heavy psalm. It's a cry from the heart. It's out of the depths. But I know we both want to end kind of on the sunny side of the street with the final verse and, you know, restore unto me the joy of your salvation. We'll come back to that. But one thing I'm not going to talk about, but I can't help mentioning because it's so much fun, is this text is one of those places where we glimpse the psychoanatomy of Hebrew. Because, you know, we associate the heart with feeling and the brain with thinking. In the Old Testament, the heart is the place where you think. The place where you feel is in your guts, in your bowels, in your kidneys. Mm-hmm. And this text says, you desire truth in the, this is verse 6, in the inward being. In Hebrew, it's actually kidneys. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then later, create in me a clean heart.
really means create in me a rationality without rationalizations.
Mm-hmm.
Create in me clear, healthy thinking.
Yeah, it's that yielding of the nerve center of your being idea. It's also, I often say, and don't intend to be glib, but people who have been harmed by others or they've done things themselves, that healing, one way to describe healing is when that which has harmed you or hurt you, or that which you've done to harm or hurt yourself or others, no longer defines or defiles you. It doesn't mean that you still don't feel remorse or even the pain of it, but you don't redefine yourself by it, and you don't live according to that definition. You live according to the growth through it, so to speak. What I see in this psalm is the kind of brutal honesty that one might find in certain self-help circles or groups or AA conferences, that kind of thing. And that the weapon, like the weapon of war, is humiliation. The harm to ourselves when we do fail is that we do feel humiliated and we want God to restore our humanity.
So the New Testament reading for today is John 12. When I am lifted up, I will draw all people unto me. I wish that the New Testament passage today was the material in Acts about Saul before he was Paul. Because to me, the New Testament counterpart to this psalm is the story of Paul, who, like David, had blood on his hands. He was an accessory to the murder of Stephen. He terrorized and led house invasions and imprisonments of members of the Jesus movement. So Paul, like David here, absolutely knows who he is. And yet, no one spoke more eloquently about grace than Paul.
Yeah, and it suggests to me about the importance and the role of self-awareness. And that requires a certain depth of engaging oneself in honesty and an ability to look at that we are. One of my predecessors used to say, "There's more grace in God than there is sin in us." But the more grace that's in God does not negate the fact that there's sin in us. So we have to allow ourselves to be aware and to receive the message of awareness, and sometimes it can come through a dramatic experience of hitting rock bottom. In Paul's case, it was a spiritual theophany on a road. But I want to still be cautious about self-awareness. Doesn't always have to come in such a big and dramatic way. It's almost like putting responsibility on the created spirit, on God, to do something dramatic. How much do you need to be shown, right? For some, it is what it is. But part of the faithful living is embracing for the benefit and the friendship that self-awareness is.
So let me just get to that final verse. Restore to me the joy of your salvation. That is a renewed sense that life is worth living, and sustain in me a willing spirit, the courage to show up for roll call even after betraying the cause, as a busted hero reporting for duty, even after being disgraced. And why should we accept this forgiveness and move on? Because God, our communities, our families, our causes need us back in the fray to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly before our God.
And the more that one is willing to do that and to go on that journey, it's a reminder that it's possible for all of us, that those who do that are not unique in that sense, in such a way that we feel like, oh, I could never do that. You know, I could never grow in that way. The reality is that it is a universal capacity for all of human beings to grow in that way.
Thanks for listening. You can visit our website for more Bible study resources, yalebiblestudy.org. Chapter, Verse, and Season is a production of the Center for Continuing Education at Yale Divinity School. It's produced by creator and managing editor Joel Baden, production manager Kelly Morrissey, associate producer Aiden Stoddart, and I'm your host and executive producer Helena Martin. And our theme music is by Calvin Linderman. We'll be back with another conversation from Chapter, Verse, and Season.